Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, my name is Tony Hanek, co-owner of Wholesale Fund, a company that helps bring manufacturers and distributors together so each one can drive more distribution and more sales into their business starting today. We want to welcome you to the Wholesale Fund Expert Interview Series, where we bring wholesale experts together to talk about hot topics that you want to hear so you can learn how to quickly get your product on the shelves faster and more efficiently without making those costly mistakes. Wholesale Fund is proud to present Karen Waxman, the thought leader when it comes to getting new products into retail chain stores. She is the author of How to Sell Your Product, Invention or Craft to Major Retailers, and is a sought-after wholesale coach and consultant who works with a handful of selected clients. Karen has spent years selling millions of units to the world's largest retailers and now dedicates her time to teaching entrepreneurs how to market and sell their wholesale products to retailers. Please welcome Karen. How are you, Karen?
I'm great. Hi. Thanks for having me.
Hey, no problem. You know, it's we get a lot of demand from a lot of manufacturers that call us periodically. And one of the really hot topics that they always ask for is, how do I get myself into retail chains? And we are so happy at Wholesale Fund that you were able to do this expert. And so we do want to say thank you, and we really appreciate your time today.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I'm excited.
So, you know, getting into the meat of it right away, so our listeners can hear how they can get their products into retail stores. I know that you get a lot of questions as well, really specific questions about how to get your product into retail chains. And going over there, I know that you mentioned quite a few of those questions. One is basically, let's just start off really quickly. How can someone get started with the packaging of their product?
Sure. So you're right. I teach a lot of classes and workshops, and primarily to people who have products, inventions, or crafts and want to get into stores, and definitely for people who have no sales experience or buyer relationships. That's been my focus. So obviously people come to my classes all the time and say, hey, Karen, I have this great product, but what do I do about packaging? What do I need to know in regards to major retailers, you know, to do it, you know, to set it up effectively? Obviously, there's a lot to it, but I can kind of touch upon some stuff that I think is really important to know. So if you're trying to package your product, the one thing that I would tell people to do, I should say that packaging is probably one of the most important things you want to consider when going after big chain stores. Buyers really, really care about packaging. And they care about it for a reason. If you think about it, when you walk into a major retailer, what you first do is you walk into a store and you actually see product in its packaging, not just the product itself, but the actual packaging is the first thing that people see. So obviously, when a buyer buys something, they're going to want to make sure that your packaging looks good, is effective, and relates to their store and it fits within their store. So that's why I tell people to spend more money, more time on packaging than anything else. So what can you do to kind of help yourself? Well, one thing I share with people is that I tell people to basically get in their cars and go to your local mall and start, bring a little pad of paper and start taking a look around into the major retailers. Walk into these stores and go to the area where your product, the type of product that you're selling, would be located. So if you have a consumer electronics product, you want to go to the consumer electronics section. You know, if you have a toy product, et cetera. So go to the area and start analyzing what's happening in that particular section. And the reason I tell people to do that is because you're going to find out a lot of information about what the buyer really cares about. If you walk into the area and you're looking around at all your competition and they have products in a box, and it's a small box, but your product is on a hanging card, you know you're going to have a problem because, you know, the buyer really actually cares about, the look and feel of the store, and they purchase products according to what made sense for them. So by looking at the area, you're going to see what buyers care about. How big is the product, you know, your competitor's packaging? What do they have on it? These are some of the products that they picked, so there's a reason they chose those items. You can obviously personalize them, but you definitely need to think about how it aligns with the store. And by walking into the different stores and paying attention to what buyers have already purchased, you're going to get so much information. And people always ask me, how do I even find somebody to package my product? Well, the one thing that I tell people to do, there's a couple of ways, just quickly. I know that we have we don't have a lot of time, but one thing I tell people to do, go online and do, you know, do a search. Go to websites like freelance.com or elance.com. There's a lot of websites out there where freelancers are looking for extra work. So just type in packaging, and you know, when you get to these sites, and you're going to get a whole slew of options of companies who you know, would love to take on projects for packaging. So that's one option. The other option basically is to call your local trade association. I don't know if you know this, but there's trade associations related to every type of product out there. Again, if you have a toy product, there's a toy product association. Consumer electronics product, there's a consumer electronics association. Basically, contact your association, just do a Google search and find them, and call them and say, hey, I have a similar product. Do you guys have a referral or someone that you think is good? And they usually would be more than happy to help. So those are a couple of great options for you to get started.
No, I think that's absolutely right on. I think a lot of do you find that like a lot of entrepreneurs themselves just come up with their own packaging off the bat, and they think that, you know, essentially it's the best and best thing out there? They haven't really done their homework. They haven't gone out and checked out the areas of interest where they're going to, actually gone to the retail stores, and they come up with a subpar packaging, but do they end up going to the buyer and the buyer is just like, you know, that's just not going to cut it. You know, I'm looking for something a little bit more, has a little bit more pizzazz to it. I'd find that that would be probably a painstaking process, but at the same time, I bet it's easy if they just set the expectations and their and do their focus groups beforehand and find out what packaging is going to work.
Totally. I mean, the bottom line is, you know, the people who go out and do the research in advance before they even spend any money are the people who are going to be more successful because, again, just going into, most people don't do this. They don't go to the stores and pay attention to what the buyers are already buying.
Yep.
So that's really important, and yes, absolutely. You know, spend the additional time in the beginning, and you'll save yourself a lot of time, headache, money. And obviously, if you've already created packaging and you're not sure if it's a good product, take that product in its packaging and go walk around and ask people. Ask random people in an area. Just say, hey, I need an honest opinion. What does this say to you? Does this packaging make sense? I'm not looking for a compliment. I'm looking for information. You know, ask your friends and family. They're honest. They're brutal. They'll tell you the truth. So to really go out and put yourself on the line, and you might not hear what you want to hear, but it's going to help you in the long run.
No, I think that's great, and that's super advice. You know, that's something that definitely I'll tell, you know, starters, basically people that are just starting out in startups or wanting to start a product, absolutely to come to you because you, it sounds like you've been doing this for a decade now. You've got it down pat, and the system is – I love it. I just love it. So, you know, one of the next questions is how do you get a buyer's contact information? I know that a lot of people out there are just kind of sitting at home, and they're like – you know, is it impossible to get into these big, big box chains, retail chains? Like, you know, they've called these people and they've, you know, looked at different vendor departments and they've got a whole lot of no's and they, you know, they get defeated right off the bat and they just don't know where to go.
Sure. Well, so I guess the question is how to find buyer's contact information.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So, I mean, basically, it's actually a lot easier than most people think. So just so you know, if you contact a major retailer and you call their front desk and you say, hey, I want to be a vendor, guess what? They're not going to share with you the information that you want. They're not going to tell you the buyer's name. And the reason is because everybody calls and asks to be a vendor for a big chain store. So they have to create some form of protocol. Otherwise, they're going to torture the buyers. So what they'll do is they'll actually redirect you to something called a vendor department, and we can get into that in a little bit. But really what it comes down to is they're going to redirect you to a department that will take a look at your product and then decide from there. So, again, my recommendation has always been to go direct to the buyers, but if you wanted to get their buyer's names, what I recommend you do is actually there's a take a look at of a couple of different websites. There are companies out there who've actually spent the time and effort finding buyers' names. That's all they do. That's their entire business model. You have to pay some money, but you can actually go out and get that information. So the Chain Store Guide is a company that solely has buyers' names. So I think their website is CSGIS.com, CSGIS.com. And another one is the Salesman's Guide. I can't remember exactly their website. It's probably the Salesman's
Sure.
Guide. But basically,
Okay.
those are two great companies who, you know, go out and spend all their time finding buyers' names. And the one thing I say is that if you are actually going to go out and spend the money on these lists and find out the names of the buyers,
Yeah.
make sure that the buyers' lists are no longer than a year old. It's really important.
Okay.
Because if you go out and, you know, get a list over than a year old, you're going to see that a lot of the names are obsolete. And there's a reason for that. Buyers change jobs a lot. Most people don't know that. So you're going to get a lot of, you know, wrong information if you buy a list older than a year old. So I hope that helps.
That's great. You know, it's in that little tiny pointer. Probably it would save me about 10 hours of research.
Oh, even
just
more.
Scoping out the Yeah.
Yeah,
right,
no,
exactly.
Trust me. I've tried every which way. I was a manufacturer's rep for a long time, and my whole thing was, I mean, it was a lot of torture trying to find buyers' names. Nobody shares it with you. You have to dig. And anyways, it'll just save you a tremendous amount of time and headache.
That's great. Thank you so much for that pointer. And so I think the next little point here and a question that comes off often is what to do if a buyer says no to you.
Yeah, I mean that's everybody's nightmare, right?
Right.
A major retailer buyer saying no to you. Guess what, guys? Buyers are going to say no to you, and they love to say no to you with big chain stores. So if you know that already, you know, let's just put that aside because I have been told no for years with big chain store buyers, but I've actually gotten business from them. And so here's a couple of things to think about. So first of all, as I mentioned before, buyers change jobs a lot. It is very common for you to call a major retail buyer, and a few months later, they're no longer that buyer. Why? Well, there's a lot of different reasons. First of all, when you become a really good buyer, all the big chain stores want you, right? Because that, if you're a good buyer, you're buying really good stuff and you're selling and you're making money for the company. So they're always being pulled, you know, with the different chain stores. The other piece that people don't realize is that, you know, being a buyer, it's very much a scientific experience. They have to buy a certain number of products, and the products have to be in alignment with the store, and it has to sell, and you have to buy a certain number of quantities, and you have to deal with margins and markets and figure out the pricing and so forth. So, you know, it's a very, you know, it's the better and the more practice you get as a buyer buying things, the better that you are. So what happens is major retailers tend to switch buyers into different categories. So they might, they move them around for different types of products because what they want them to do is become better buyers. So the good news for you is that if a buyer says no to you, the one thing I tell people is that you definitely have the opportunity to sell to that company because even if they were really mean to you, you know, they're usually not mean, but definitely what, you know, I say to people is that you could call back in a few months and the buyer's gone and you can start all over again. So the good news is that when a buyer does say no to you, find out why. That's like the biggest thing here. Your always ultimate goal is always to figure out what their issue is with your product so that you can fix it or adjust it accordingly. Because, again, when the buyer leaves and another buyer comes along or you sell to another chain store or something, you're already going to fix the problem that's coming up for you when you're selling to these chain stores. So, you know, bottom line, find out why. And, you know, if it's pricing, you're going to have to figure out how to go back and get pricing. You know, if it's a packaging issue, you can go back to the drawing board and come back. And the great news is you're never going to never be able to sell to this chain store just because this one buyer said no to you. Does that make sense?
Right. No, that makes complete sense. And, you know, I always said that the selling process, when they say no, that's when the sales process begins. So.
Yeah. Well, I mean, sometimes they're always looking for products. They're always looking for, you know,
sure.
the next best thing. So, you know, but they do say no. Could be they had a fight with their husband. Could be they bought too much stuff and they got in trouble with their boss. It could be so many different reasons. You can't take it personally.
No, you can't. And I think that's a wonderful tip there. So a lot of other here's some other questions that really actually come up quite a bit is how to become a major retail vendor and what not to do.
Yeah. So we kind of touched upon it a little bit. So you call a front desk and you don't know what you're doing. And the first thing, this is probably what most of your competition does. They call the main, you know, switchboard and you say something like, I want to be a vendor. How do I get started? And what they do is they redirect you to this thing called a vendor department. I kind of mentioned that before.
Yeah.
So what is a vendor department? It's essentially a place that a department that's responsible for sifting through different product concepts, vendor applications, basically. And then once they choose, they think your product's interesting enough, then they'll redirect that information to a buyer. So the problem with that is that it's a very slow, painful process. It could take 3 months or a year before even a buyer, you know, gets access to this information. It's just part of the challenges of, you know, you get a lot of information sent through your company. It just takes some time to kind of sift through this stuff. So what I tell people, and so what a vendor department looks like, by the way, is they'll usually redirect you to their website, and then what they'll do is they'll have you fill out a whole slew of forms, financial questions, issues related to, you know, your product and so forth. And I've seen so many inventors or people with products who have gone this route and got so depressed because it's so long to fill out these forms and just like questions that you never even thought of. Right, but you don't even know whether or not your product's going to sell. You don't know a whole lot. You're still new to
sure.
the game, so it's not an enjoyable process. So
it's like they just want to say it's a kind of way of basically getting people out. Essentially, it's like fill out all this information. If you really want to do it, then you'll do it.
Right, and there's a lot of people who don't, so that sifts round one. And then
yep.
the other part of it, the people who do it, you know, look, if you have to do this for 15 different big chain stores, I mean, you're tired. And
right.
it's just not that fun. And anyways, it's totally, you know, sales 101. Don't do what everybody else does. Because there's a lot of people who've actually gone out, you know, who do this. Most people go that route. And the great news is that you don't have to be like everybody else. So what I teach people to do is actually contact the buyer directly. And, you know, there's I have a book on it, and I teach people what to say to the buyers to get them to buy and so forth. But really what not to do is to follow protocol and go through the vendor department. I say, you know, ignore the step that everybody else does. Go find the right buyer, have a conversation with them, find out if your product is ready to go, you know, get your feedback, you know, and so forth. So that's the right way to go to become a vendor.
That's so great. You know, it's just like, it's almost like the you've narrowed this process down, which probably takes people, like you said, 3 months to a year. You're just cutting down the sales process in half, if even more.
Yeah, it's just to find out, look, you know, a part of having a small business is you never know if you're doing anything right. I mean, that's the biggest challenge. And then when you start getting through all these processes and you're answering these questions, there's just a lot of anxiety going on. So
yep.
why not just find out whether or not your product is viable, interesting, working? Obviously, you want to prepare your product for major retail success, and, you know, I go into that. But really, the bottom line is find out faster. Get the information faster. If they don't like it, fix it, come back. Just get the work done and don't do what everybody else does.
That's great. So what do you here's another question. Do you have to be a large company to be able to sell to major retailers, or can you be pretty small startup?
I get this question all of the time, and I still, you know, basically a lot of guys come to my event, my classes, and they're always like, look, I only have one product, one SKU. There's no way that I can go to a major retail buyer, because I hear all the time that you can't be a one-product guy, you know?
Yeah.
And I tell people that's not true. There are lots of products out there that have made it that's only been one product, you know, and the bottom line is that, you know, major retail buyers, they are looking for new stuff. I mean, think about why. They're looking for new product all the time. They have a
sure.
lot of competition. Everybody is buying from all these different stores. If their competition has a new, cool, interesting product that you don't have, guess what? Your customers are going to start going to your competitor. They can't have that. So that's why they have dedicated buyers who are constantly, you know, putting new stuff on the shelves. They'll test stuff out. They really are okay with that if it's the right product. They think they can make money on it. Trust me, if a buyer really wants your product, if it's a good product, they'll find a way to get it in your store, in their store. So, yes, sometimes they use that as an excuse. And
right.
they say, you know, sometimes
push
it is.
Back.
Right, it's
yeah.
a pushback.
Yeah.
Yeah, you only have one product. Okay,
right.
well, you know, what I say to people who hear that, find other retailers, you know, go out and do kind of do the – contact a bunch of other retailers. If everyone's saying the same thing about your product, then you might have to consider it only because that's the only way you can move forward. But most of the time, it's really not true. I actually work with a lot of guys who only have one product, who don't have a lot of money, who get stuff into stores. Whether or not it succeeds or not is another issue. But, you know, the bottom line is that it's, you know, you could definitely get your product in store if you only have one product.
You know what I love is just that you can tell just in the how passionate you are with what you're doing and helping other entrepreneurs. Now, if other entrepreneurs can take that same enthusiasm and passion and take it, there's one product to a major retail store and just hit the pavement, somebody is going to say yes.
Totally. I mean, look, if you believe in your product, you've gone that far. You've actually created the damn thing and you packaged it. It's not an easy feat. I mean, if you really put some money and some time and some energy into it. You have to. There's no one who's going to believe more in your business than you. So you have to work on your mindset and just push forward and find a way.
This is great. So the next question is here. What should you do if a buyer asks for exclusivity?
Yeah. So people always ask me that. So what happens if a buyer says, "Oh, well, I only want to put." You can only sell to me, nobody else, for a while. Exclusivity. And I say, don't do it, unless it's Walmart. And we all know that Walmart has the ability to buy, however
right.
many millions of units. Everyone right. else, it's first of all, they're probably not going to ask you that because it doesn't happen very often. Because there's a lot of risk on the retailer's side, too. I mean, why would they go and put themselves in jeopardy as well as you? Because they would obviously have to provide a pretty good deal for you to be able to do that. So they'd rather have less risk, test it out, see if it's interesting, and so forth. So honestly, I would never, your job is to be able to develop revenue for your business. I don't believe it's a very smart move unless it's such a great deal.
I wouldn't
do it. There's so many. If they want exclusivity, that means you have a great product and you find someone else who will buy it without exclusivity.
Right, exactly. So the next question is, what are some of the differences in selling to online retailers versus the big retail chains?
Yeah, so, it's funny because selling to online retailers or big chains, small retailers, I mean, it's all the same thing, right? You're actually going and connecting with the buyer, and they have money, and if they like your product, they're going to buy it. I mean, that's pretty much what it comes down to. The only difference between the big chain stores and online retailers are, well, online retailer, actually, they buy a lot less quantity just because, they don't need to stock as much in the stores, right?
Sure.
So that's one thing. The other thing is that, when you go after buyers to contact them, to sell stuff to them, just know that there is a buyer for a major retailer and then there's a buyer for the online retailer. They're two separate buyers for the same product. So, for instance, if you're selling jewelry and you're going after, say, Walmart or something, I don't know, there's a Walmart buyer for jewelry for the stores, and then there's a Walmart buyer for jewelry for the online piece. So just know that there's two separate separate buyers, which is good for you because you could start out by, maybe getting an online retailer to put it on their site, to start out with, and then go the other way, depending on what you think. If your product doesn't look good online, then it might be something that you want to reconsider. But overall, those are some differences. Also, online retailers tend to use distributors a lot, distribution systems. Mostly because, they have to store the product somewhere, and distribution companies basically go out and, ship the products and do all the logistics. So a lot of times, if you call an online retailer, the buyer will actually tell you, we work with distributors only. And the way that I would handle that is if they say, we only work with distributors, you would say, okay, can you give me some ideas of the distributors that you currently use? Let me see what I can come up with. And they'll give you the names that they currently work with. And then I would call the distributor and say, hey, I might have a deal with Walmart if you work with me.
Yeah, no, that's a great point. I find a lot of online retailers, too, they do. You're absolutely right. They team up with other logistical companies to help with drop shipping their product.
Yeah.
So when you order it up, it's basically the order goes through to another company and then they just drop ship it for them. So they're kind of like they're the face of the company, but actually the back end logistics might be another company as
exactly.
well.
Exactly. You're basically using their site as a marketing tactic. Everything else is logistically handled by a distributor.
You got it. So another quick question is, what is the manufacturer's rep, and how do you hire one?
Yeah, so, everybody always says that they need to hire a professional. They need to find a sales rep to sell their product to major retailers, and that's what a manufacturer's rep is. Manufacturer's rep, I was one for a long time. Basically, it's someone who is a sales rep who has experience selling stuff to the chain stores and will represent your product. That's what they do. And obviously, as someone who's done it a long time, I kind of teach people how to not use a professional and do the work yourself, because I believe that anyone can get their stuff in the stores without getting professional help. However, some people just really don't want any part of that, and so obviously working with someone who has the experience it is great for them. And that's a manufacturer's rep. So typically how they get paid, they get paid on a percentage basis. They're usually performance-based. Depending on the type of product, they can take commissions anywhere from 5 to 25% of typically of your product. So depending how much margin, how much extra money is padded into the type of product that you have, they'll determine accordingly. And then the ones that are really good, they usually take some upfront fees because they spend a lot of time on your business, and it takes a while to get stuff into stores, and they want to get compensated for their time.
Sure. No, absolutely.
And I was just going to tell you, the way to find them is basically, so really quick, a couple of options. You can go online, do a Google search, and really type in. So as I said before, you could find the association related to your product. Again, if you have an apparel product, there's an apparel association and so forth. So actually just doing that search, getting their number, contacting them and saying, hey, I'm looking for a manufacturer's rep who's related to my type of product. Do you have any recommendations? And they usually always share that information with you. So that's one great option. Otherwise, you can also look online. There's actually manufacturers rep associations, and a lot of them are associated with that. Just very similar to a product association, there's manufacturers rep associations. You can contact them and say you're looking for somebody who can represent you for your particular product, and see if they have any referrals that way.
Oh, that's great. Do they actually have did you ever find manufacturers rep that basically go out and have their own business, and they just basically take on take on various different products? Like, for instance, like an example might be like a wagon jobber or whatnot?
Yeah. So, there's all sorts of people who, look, if you're good at selling a retail, sell a lot of different products to different stores. It's very common for a manufacturer's rep to take on like 20 lines at the same time, and then be able to go out and sell the products accordingly, which can be good for you, and then also could be kind of a hindrance. The good news is they've built some relationships with some buyers, so they're able to go and sell it maybe a little bit more quickly. On the bad sense, depending on which product does better, that's where their focus is going to be. So, they don't want to cause conflict of interest within their products that they take on. So, it's something that you have to think through when you're working with a manufacturer's rep.
Oh, this is great. Hey, thanks a lot, Karen. I have one more question for you before we end this session. Do you need to have a patent to sell to major retailers?
That's a really good question. People ask me that all the time. The truth is, you do not need a patent to get your stuff into stores. However, depending on what it is, you probably want to consider one. So there's a lot of products on the shelves of retailers that currently don't have patents. And part of the problem with getting a patent is that it costs a lot of money, and that's usually the first reason why somebody actually goes out and stops doing what they want to do with their product, because they're afraid of spending the money for getting a patent. You don't even know if the product idea is a good one, so why would you go spend 10 grand to patent it without knowing for sure? So there's a lot of when you go into stores, you'll see something called patent pending. There's a lot of patent pending products out there. And so there's something to consider. If you have a product that you are kind of thinking about and you want to get into stores, but you're not 100% committed yet and you probably don't have the money right now, I would consider doing something called filling out a provisional patent application. Basically, a provisional patent application, it's super cheap. It's a couple hundred bucks. I would get a lawyer to kind of help review that piece of it, but it's significantly cheaper than actually getting a patent. What that does is it allows you to have like a patent for basically a year. You actually have rights to this idea for a full year before you have to make the decision of whether or not to go and fully patent it. But the caveat is that you have to do it within 1 year, and the you know right after the year is over, if you haven't done anything with your product, you don't have the patent anymore unless you pay for the patent. So the good news is you don't have to spend a fortune right out of the gate. You can get a you know do a patent pending. I mean a patent. Provisional application and basically get started that way. So at least you secure your product. If you have a product that's phenomenal, no one on the planet's ever done it before, you are a 100% believer, you really want to make sure that there's you know no issues there, then obviously maybe you need to consider spending the money. But for the most of us who don't have the cash, that's a great way to get started.
That is an amazing way to get started. I had it's funny that you even said that because I've had not only friends, but I've had colleagues who are starting out something. They've asked me for advice on patents. I've always kind of told them to go to a patent attorney and get advice to see how much it would cost. And you're absolutely right. It costs like $10,000. And I had one example. This guy wanted to sell a baby product, and he was so adamant about it. But he was like butting up against whether or not he should get a patent or not get a patent. And it was kind of stopping him to move forward.
Right.
And I was just like, you know what? You got to move forward. Just go ahead and test the market, see if it's good enough, and then, you know, go out there. But getting a provisional patent is, I think that's a super idea, and I actually didn't even really think about that. So.
Thanks. Yeah, it's a provisional patent application. So it's basically, yeah, it'll allow you to be able to kind of have ownership over it for a year. I would spend some extra cash having, you know, a patent attorney review it at least, but it's so much less money than what you would, you know, if you go the straight route.
That's super. Well, so I think we've gone through the major questions out there that those pain points that a lot of entrepreneurs are going through, or even mid-sized companies go through in terms of getting more distribution and more sales. Can you just tell me a little bit about and give me a plug about basically what your services and you do for your company?
Yeah, absolutely. So basically, my whole mission now, you know, I represented companies for a long time, and what I really figured out was that I love teaching entrepreneurs how to get products on the shelves of retailers, you know, more quickly, more efficiently, and especially for people who have no sales experience or buyer relationships. You know, it took me a long time to figure out what worked and what helped get products into stores with buyers. So I ended up writing a step-by-step guide outlining what I do, and now I teach classes, I have this book, and I really spend time, you know, helping people get to understand the major retail market and how it works and how to get buyers to buy, what piques their interest, how to prepare your product for major retail success. And basically, you know, everything you need to know about getting stuff in the store. So that's my main, you know, that's my passion. That's what I'm into right now. I do consulting. I help companies figure out what they're doing wrong and or just need some help, or people just starting out who are about to start creating product and just want to know how to prepare it so that they have a better chance of succeeding with major retailers. So, you know, anything related to getting stuff in the stores, it's kind of been my that's what I'm up to.
That's great. So which website do they need to go to make sure
absolutely.
That, you know?
So my website is productforprofit.com, product,
okay.
F-O-R, profit.com.
Right.
And actually, I have a series of videos that you can see answers a lot of these questions and a lot more. So if you're interested in getting access to the entire video series, you know, for free, you can go to that site as well. We'll give you some more info.
That's great. You know, I think especially this is going to be an ongoing series, but with this one, we're going to be posting it on our blog. We're going to be the people that couldn't get on, we're going to be sending it back out so they can get back on to this and listen to the interview. And they can also go to your site, check out Karen's site, productforprofit.com. Was that correct?
That's exactly right, yes.
All right,
product,
check out our site.
Right.
And, you know, buy our book. It's, you know, it's a very comprehensive book. And basically what I really love about what you've done, you've taken it from the buyer's approach and what the buyer wants. A lot of people that I find that sell basically set it up where they just go through the sales process and they sell. And then after they sell, they basically don't know what to do next. They just say features, benefits. But what you've done really is putting it into the buyer's mind. And I love that because you're taking the other approach of what they really want.
Yeah, and that's why it's working well for, like, engineers and people who don't have sales experience, because even if you do or you don't, you have to think from a – if you stop thinking about it from a sales perspective and start looking at it from the buyer's perspective and what they're paying attention to, you can actually transform your product into something that makes more sense for them and have a better success rate. So that's where I think that's more important than I still teach people how to – what to say to them and how to get them to buy the basic sales stuff, but it's not really about that. It's more about how to how to think from the buyer's perspective, so when you do contact them, they actually end up loving you more than for all the other people who call with stupid questions and issues and whatever they do.
Well, great. No, that's, you're absolutely right. So, well, I want to thank you for this the expert wholesale interview series. You can also find Karen on about.com. She's the wholesale expert. Don't forget to go to wholesalefund.com. Check out our blog. We're going to be updating new expert wholesale interviews on a biweekly basis. We're going to be talking to buyers at Costco, to 7-Eleven, to any type of way of making you get more distribution and more sales. And we just want to thank Karen for being on this call today.
Absolutely. I'm great to be here, and I really appreciate your time, and I love what you're up to.
Thanks a lot, Karen, and we'll talk soon.
Thank you.
Okay, bye now.